The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Hey folks, I challenge you to think of at least one thing you no longer do that you wish you could. Do you miss like playing golf, maybe long walks with your spouse, sleeping through the night? Are you ready to start living without pain? My colleagues and friends, Hugh Hewitt, Dennis Prager, Mike Gallagher, have been talking about their own successful experience with Relief Factor, and you can add Eric Metaxas to that list. Relief Factor is changing the lives of tens of thousands of Salem radio listeners by reducing and even eliminating daily aches and pains. ReliefFactor.com is full of great success stories, and now I am on board. For just $19.95, Relief Factor is offering a three-week quick start that could help you live your life with little to no pain. Go to ReliefFactor.com to see testimonials from folks all over the country. I love reading them. Over 70% of those that try Relief Factor continue as a customer. Feel the relief and get back your independence and freedom from the aches and pains of everyday life. Go to ReliefFactor.com. Read the testimonies. I tell all my relatives to take it. ReliefFactor.com.
Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. Please keep your arms and legs inside the car at all times.
This is your final warning.
Now, here's your host, Mr. Thrill Ride himself, Eric Metaxas.
Hey, folks, welcome to hour two, except this is the second segment of our bunker video series. This is episode number three. We're all in the bunker. I am 3 miles beneath the surface of, the surface of the earth. The crust of the earth, the mantle. I'm basically where the crust and the mantle meet, way, way, way down. Remember Project Mohole from the 1960s, where they sent a pipe down? Nobody remembers this. Anyway, that's where I am, and it's
Is it getting hot?
It was created during. No, there's ventilation down here. There are pipes. There's all these chambers. This was created during World War II. And Suzanne and my daughter and I, we are breathing oxygen from World War II.
Okay. I know you're breathing carbon dioxide from World War II.
It's incredible to be way down here. At least I'm safe. If there's a daisy cutter, we won't even feel a ripple, no matter what.
Hey, is there any chance?
We're war with China right now, as you know. If China starts dropping daisy cutters, because that's all they have. So what should we be talking about? We've got Bob Woodson coming up again.
I have a question.
He's a hero. He's amazing.
Is there any truth to the mold people down there? Did you spot any, say, maybe half a mile down before you hit 3 miles?
The mold people, I got to be honest with you. Did you ever see that episode, The Old Superman, where these creatures crawl out of a pipe from the center of the earth?
Yes.
That's who the mold people are. And I got to be honest, they get a bad rap. They're cool. Okay. They don't mean anybody any harm. They're tiny. They have star-shaped noses. They burrow. So what? Okay. I'm not going to judge them for that. A lot of us have burrowed, in our pre-Christian days. So here's the story. We've got to talk about right now, Albin, you have something to share that I know is not important, and I'd love you to share that right now.
Okay. Yeah, I have a couple of things. I was talking about an update from Stop and Shop. This is true here in Tarrytown. They have a senior hours. Okay. And my wife said, hey,
wait. Hold on. They have a senior hour because they don't want seniors to catch it from younger people.
Well, yeah. So she said it's at 6 o'clock. And I said, oh, that sounds interesting. So the old folks can go down at 6 o'clock tonight. She said, no, it's 6 a.m. So I said, okay, so they're the first ones in. They're the first ones in the door so they can cough all over the cucumbers, right, and then let the kids in, right? So that's what they're doing here in Tarrytown from 6 to 7:30 a.m.
Thank God for you, our correspondent from Tarrytown. Did you know that, like, old people, they all get up at 4 a.m. anyway?
Exactly.
To pee and to have their coffee, and they're, like, restless at 5:10. Like, their day is half gone. They're ready for breakfast at Golden Corral or something like that. It's a whole different, it's different, We have a couple other things to talk about. I want to say that the whole thing about the Kung Flu fighting, when we aired that yesterday, now, if you want to watch Bunker video number two, that's yesterday's Bunker video. We aired that that song, and that song speaks to our hearts deeply. Many of us, certain generation, we remember where we were when that first Chinese virus hit American shores. It was unbelievable. But it gave a lot of us younger people at that time, it gave us a voice. And a lot of people, yesterday, we had somebody in the White House ask the president. He said that one of his aides had referred to this virus as Kung Flu. And the reporter kept repeating it, and the president had not heard it. And he asked pointedly, well, which of my people said that, and the reporter didn't say. So we think the reporter thought of it, and that the reporter is the one trying to float this out there.
Yeah.
And so there's a hashtag Kung Flu and then hashtag Kung Flu fighting. But I want to reiterate, we were prophetic in that. I believe that we have a prophetic gift, and that yesterday on our show, by playing that song and calling that the first Chinese virus, that we were onto something.
So Kung Flu is it's a pun. You know, obviously, but there was no cure for the original Kung Fu fever that swept the country, but there is a cure for Kung Flu, and it's penicillin.
Penicillin?
Yes, penicillin.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Okay, I think we're done. No, wait a second. Now, hold on a second. Yesterday, I tweeted out that our buddy, we need to have him on the show either tomorrow or next week. But our buddy Kevin
McCullough,
he made an announcement that they had found a cure or a treatment for this virus, and people mocked it on social media. And the fact is, basically, he's right, and there's more and more information about this. So there's a lot to be hopeful about. I want to say we need to think of other things. It gets complicated because people say calling it Chinese virus is racist. I don't think that's racist. I really don't. But maybe we need to think of other things to call it. It's a pandemic. I thought maybe people can write us if they think of a clever idea of what do you call it besides Chinese virus. I thought of this. I thought of Wuhan Tangdemic.
What about panda? Wuhan
Tangdemic.
What about pandademic? Pandademic.
Oh, man. Kung Fu pandademic. Kung Flu pandademic. Albin. That is so good. And by the way, it's not racist to call everybody's ordering out now, right? So it's not racist to call it Chinese takeout, but it's racist to call it COVID-19 takeout.
Oh,
okay. So when you're ordering Chinese food, you don't say I'm ordering COVID-19 food. In that case, the word Chinese is perfectly appropriate.
Right. And do not use chopsticks. That's cultural appropriation. Use a fork.
Use a fork, which was invented by my ancestors, the Greeks. We don't mind people stealing from us because we invented everything. You know what I mean? What are you going to do? Hey, what are you going to do? We see it as a form of flattery. You can even say Opa if you like. Although in German, Opa means grandfather. But I'm also German. Okay, so we shouldn't announce food for the poor. If you want to do something great, I always say, basically, we said this years ago, and I forgot to repeat it. On this show, we always want to present something positive, and we want to give you a shot of hope because there's a lot of negativity out there. We have to cover some of the negativity, but we want to give you a shot of hope. And when I say a shot of hope, I'm thinking of something like, for example, prayer. Suzanne and I are praying more, and we're actually seeing small miracles and great things, and we are believing that God is going to bring revival to this nation, and that what the devil and what evil men intend for evil, God can turn to good. He does that through Scripture. He shows us that he's the Lord of creation. He can weave the most evil plans into something beautiful if we give those plans to him and if we pray. So I want to say that, number one. I also want to say, if you're looking for something good to do, if you don't know what to do, I mentioned we're doing this thing with Food for the Poor. We're trying to raise money for folks who are literally starving and dealing with malnutrition and no clean water in Guatemala. They are suffering all the time. We're going through this strange season of this pandemic, but they're suffering all the time. If you want to do something good right now, or help your kids understand that there are people that are dealing with worse things by far than we are, like boredom, go to our website, Metaxastalk.com. You can see the banner there. And you can, for $320, you can feed a family of four for 1 year. Folks, that is unbelievable. I want to encourage you to do that. There's a lot more that goes along with that, but I want to encourage you to do that. This has been a short video today. Have we covered everything? I think we're going to go to Bob Woodson for the rest of the hour. We're going to be back tomorrow with John Zmirak. Uh-oh.
Yes.
It's going to get crazy. I'm scared. I'm really going to pray, because John Zmirak on these bunker videos, anything can happen.
It'll be nice to see how the Beagles are doing.
We're talking end time stuff, folks. You better read Revelation and be prepared. What Zmirak could unleash tomorrow in this medium, it's going to scare a lot of people. I want you to be prayed up. He was angry before.
He was angry, kind of grumpy before. He might be extra grumpy.
All right. I think we have to go to some kung
fu. We're out of time.
Thanks for listening. Here's Bob Woodson.
Hey there, folks. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. That's the Carpenters. We don't have time to let Karen really get into it, because I'm sitting here with Bob Woodson of the Woodson Center. They have launched something called 1776. 1776unites.com is the website. And the whole idea is to counter the false, negative, weepy, defeatist narrative of the 1619 Project, launched by the sad, weepy, negative New York Times. I still can't get over, Bob, that the New York Times thought it would be wise to launch a quote-unquote project called the 1619 Project. I mean, what do they want to do? They just want to get everybody angry, I guess.
Well, they've changed from reporting to creating history.
And creating false history.
And it's really propaganda. And unfortunately, the Pulitzer organization has teamed with them and purchased copies and distributing around 3,000 schools around the country. Schools are signing up in droves to teach the children. They're bypassing the curriculum. They're in the schools. They have a ground game.
This is wicked.
It is wicked.
This is wicked. This is harmful. It's harmful to America. It's un-American. It's harmful to blacks. That much I know. What can we do about this?
Well, what we can do is we are at 1776 at the Woodson Center. We're launching a campaign, and we're encouraging people to invest in this so that we can have our counter-narratives out there. We want to have curriculum. We want to have videos, inspirational movies like showing about blacks in history who are accomplishing things.
Well, when you mentioned Robert Smalls, I mean, what a story. I can't get over that. And I know there are many stories like that. I don't know where one would find them. Are there?
We have them. That's
you have them at?
We have a ton of stories.
Now, is this stuff on your website?
It is.
Some of it.
Some of it's on our website.
Which website?
Some of them, it's on woodsoncenter.org.
WoodsonCenter.org.
Yeah. And also, you can go in our essays, there are a lot of those stories. And John Butler, who is the expert on the history of blacks in business, if you go on our website, that 1776unites.com, you can go to some of those essays, and John Butler has a number of those identified. Biddy Mason, a woman who was born in 1818 and was illiterate, and was bought by a Mormon, and she walked behind a wagon from Mississippi to Salt Lake City while having three children by this man, three girls. And then eventually she had to go to Los Angeles, where it was a free state, so she was freed. She was a midwife, and she saved, and she got $1.50 a day. She saved after 10 years and purchased land downtown Los Angeles, and became a philanthropist. She died. She had the equivalent of $6 million, and she helped found the AME church there. So there's some marvelous examples of people who have achieved against the odds. I can go on, and a lot of these will be found in our essays.
I have just in a few weeks, I'm coming out with a new book called Seven More Men, because I wrote a book called Seven Men, Seven Women. This is Seven More Men, and one of them is George Washington Carver, and the story is unbelievable. When I read his story, when I got to know this story, I just said, everybody should know this man's story. What a hero, what he did, and you talk about adversity. Oh, my gosh. These are the stories we need to be teaching, but we're not really teaching them in the schools. It is interesting how Howard Zinn and the negative, the grievance people have gotten a hold of the public school systems.
Yes. One of the things, and that's because I think those of us who believe in the virtues of our founders, we don't have a ground game. Our answers to that cannot just be another white paper at a think tank. We have to, and that's what the Woodson Center is trying to answer. We are rolling up our sleeve. We have activists. We believe that the thousands of grassroots leaders who are redeemed Josephs, I call them, in those communities, we need to arm them to be civic educators. It shouldn't just be academics purveying this knowledge and information. So the Woodson Center is planning to train and put into the hands of grassroots leaders so that after-school programs, our grassroots leaders will be the civic teachers. So we really need to develop excitement around positive figures from the past and then the present.
So, well, I mean, I get so excited just when I hear a few of these stories, because these are the stories we all need to hear. But especially young black people need to hear these stories, because you cannot fail to be inspired. I mean, when you hear that story, you want to do that. I get hopeful for the country when I see people like Candace Owens speaking out incredibly articulately. I mean, she's spectacular. And more recently, Kanye West. I mean, people who are really thinking for themselves. And I think that they're scaring the white liberal establishment, because there have never been people like this of that youth who are speaking out like that.
But there are also examples, Eric, of deep in the DNA of the country isn't racism. It's a desire to support virtue in action. When that some years ago, when this a homeless man was 40 years old, found a knapsack with $46,000 and turned it into the authorities, and somebody posted a GoFundMe, they raised $93,000 in a few days. It happened to a 56-year-old homeless black man on the streets of Oakland. A white woman came and emptied her change purse into his hat, and it had her $15,000 wedding band in it, wedding ring. She went back 6 hours later. He said, "Are you looking for this?" And someone took a picture of it and posted for him, and they raised a lot of money for him. So that says to me that Americans really are desperate to support virtue, and that's the real American character.
That's right. There's no question about it. Going back to the founders, going back to Tocqueville, going back to Lincoln, that has been who we are, and it has only really been since the 60s that this negative narrative has taken over. And let's face it, it's cultural Marxism. There are people who know that they can make money and they can get power by dividing, and if I can get black people angry at white people, I can work with that. I can make money with that. And that's what they do. They can't, you know, they can't divide the workers from the classic Marxism, you know, was pure economics. Now it's tribal, it's identity politics, but there are people making money off of that. And that's what you're talking about.
Yes, but they're also putting this nation in jeopardy too.
Well,
because
no question.
Think about this, a 10-year-old black youngster, if for 8 years he's being told in school that America is racist and that white people are all privileged and black people are victims, and then that youngster becomes 18 years old and is going to be, why would that youngster want to fight, join the military to defend a nation, or why would they want to become a member of law enforcement to protect us internally? So there's a lot at stake here. But we are hopeful. I mean, there has just been an outpouring of people in support of our funds are coming in. And with that money, we're going to develop curriculum. We're going to develop films. We're going to really launch a massive campaign. I mean, we're fighting. This is David and Goliath. I mean, the New York Times has put millions behind this effort.
There's no question about it. Millions behind it. And I still think, what in the world are they doing except virtue signaling to their woke readers? Look at us. Look how progressive we are. It's so sad, and it's so harmful. And I say this more and more boldly, that if you care about the poor in America, if you care about blacks in America, you had better not vote for the people pushing this stuff. You had better not vote for socialists or for people who are not for the free market, because then you really are enacting racist policies. You're really doing it, even though you can virtue signal to your friends. The fact is, God sees what you're doing, and you're affecting real lives. And I think we have to be bolder, because what we're selling, we know it's true, we know it works, and you have the history.
Right. But what we've got to do, we have to equip those in whose name the left said they're operating to speak for themselves. So low-income grassroots blacks are in. We also are going to produce a series of essays to stop the demonization of white people. The assumption is that any white person who lives in a trailer park and voted for Trump is a bigot. And that's not true.
Well, that's the kind of thing. The reason that offends me is because I think of my mom and my dad. I think of people that I know that voted for Trump. If somebody would dare call them racist, it makes me very angry, because that is, it's such an ugly lie. It's such an, I mean, think about it. It's no different than actually being racist. You're calling somebody something. It's a nasty, hurtful lie. I thought we had gotten past that. We're going to a break. We'll be right back talking to Bob Woodson. You got so much. Hey there, folks. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. That's Elton John, and I'm Eric. And I'm talking to Bob Woodson of the Woodson Center. Bob, what's the website for the Woodson Center?
It's woodsoncenter.org, www.woodsoncenter.org. And when you go on there, you can then click on 1776, or you can go directly to 1776unites.com.
We have to spread the word on this stuff. This is just so important. I want to go back to the 1619 Project, because the New York Times has pushed this like crazy. It's no surprise to me that the Pulitzer Prize, group has gotten behind it. It really seems like they're all in bed together. They all think the same. You try to find somebody who thinks out of the box. It's very rare. I mean, it would seem to me that President Obama, it would seem that Oprah Winfrey, that they would be able to see what you're saying.
No, I just think that a lot of the people who are their followers buy into this race grievance business. Because after all, if you're a wealthy athlete or a wealthy entertainer, you don't have to do much. Just say, I'm against racism. And you can go on, get on your yacht, get on your private plane, and enjoy yourself. And you've already virtue signaled. And therefore, it exempts you from doing anything.
Yeah.
You don't have to do any heavy lifting at all. But the other issue that we're going to be getting into is that we're going to do outreach to low-income white communities, too, because Clarence Page had in his essay a very powerful line. He said, we must, as a society, desegregate poverty so that poverty isn't associated with race. It is associated with a condition. And if we can just take the race element out of it, then we can come together, blacks and low-income whites and low-income blacks. We hope to bring them together in a conference this summer so that we can talk about what are the needs in common, what is the common ground that afflict people at the lower end, and what can we do to fix it. But as long as race is a factor, then we can't even, you can't even say you advocate for low-income whites.
And so isn't that amazing?
We need to stop that. And the 1776 in the Woodson Center, we're going to directly address that.
Did you ever write a book talking about your upbringing?
No, I haven't, but I...
What's the matter with you? You really, come on. You have an amazing story. I would just think that... I know what you're going to say. So, oh, I'm too busy. Well, of course you're too busy, but it seems to me you've got an amazing story. And even the story of building what you now call the Woodson Center, I mean, the characters that you have encountered over the years.
Well, we do have a book that's going to the publisher called Lessons from the Least of These, and where we really go into those communities. And my experience, I do say at the introduction, why I was moved to do this. And then what I do is go into each chapter. There's what we call 10 Woodsonian principles of how you engage with people. And so each chapter is a different principle. And then it has examples from low-income communities that are achieving against and individuals. So who I am is expressed in who I love and serve.
All right, that's a cop-out answer, Albin. But but you know what? It's okay. It's okay. Every guest gets one cop-out answer. That's your cop-out answer. No, I know you're sort of too humble to think that people want to hear your story. But you happen to be wrong. People do want to hear your story, and I'm glad you told a little bit of it. Is there any of it that we missed? I know you were on this program before, but a lot of people are being introduced to you today. You've encountered a lot of rough characters in your line of work who have completely turned around and been redeemed. All kinds. I remember you told a story of somebody last time. The specifics are eluding me right now. But you have seen people who really were hopeless turn their lives around.
Yeah, and one comes from my friend John Ponder, who is going to be about to be pardoned by the president. John was a bank robber in and out of jail from the time he was 14. And went to prison and got out about 12 years ago, came to Christ, and started a group called Hope for Prisoners in Las Vegas. And John's, his talk about redemption in action, John's mentor group was the FBI agent that locked him up, the U.S. attorney who prosecuted him, the judge who sentenced him. They welcomed him, and that's a part of his circle of friends. And so John has now changed, about 2,000 people who've come out of prison are out and working because of the leadership, but only 6% recidivism rate.
What?
And John tells...
Oh, my gosh.
And at his graduation, they graduate into an 18-month program, and he has about 500 volunteer mentors. 40% are police officers. So many of the police in Las Vegas who are mentoring ex-offenders arrested the person. And John gives a powerful example of grace in action. This woman was racing away from the police with her boyfriend. They had stolen something, and there was a shootout. She didn't shoot, but her boyfriend did, and both of them got shot. And the police officer who shot her came and applied a tourniquet and saved her life. And so her boyfriend went to jail for 20 years, and she went for two. And in prison, she met one of John's people and came into his program. And at the graduation, she said that she wanted to meet this police officer because he saved her life twice, physically and then spiritually, because he came to Christ.
Gosh.
He comes up at the graduation.
Hang on a second. This is a cliffhanger. Folks, don't go away. Hey there, folks. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. I'm talking to Bob Woodson of the Woodson Center. You can go to woodsoncenter.org. Bob, you're telling us an amazing story about a woman. You said she got shot. The cop who shot her puts a tourniquet on her arm, saves her life. But she said to him that he saved her life twice. Why
right,
is that?
Because at the graduation, she served 2 years in prison. At the graduation, she said that if he had not arrested me, I would have been lost. But the very fact that he arrested me and I went to jail, met John Ponder's people and came to Christ, and now I'm ready to turn my life around, that he saved my life physically but also spiritually because he put me in a situation where I was compelled to confront my vices. And he got up in the audience and came up to the front.
This is the cop.
The cop.
That
did,
shot her.
Because he was a mentor of others. And he came up and they embraced. And she turned to her young son and said, I want you to meet the man who saved mommy's life. And the place was just...
When people are demonizing police officers and you think about, here's a man doing his job, by the way, and it doesn't matter if he's black or white, but he's doing his job. And at the end of all this, this woman is thanking him publicly. Yeah. Now, who is John Ponder and what is
John
the name
Ponder
of his organization?
John Ponder is called Hope for Prisoners in Las Vegas, Nevada. President Trump was just there and sort of said he was going to give him a pardon. But John is an amazing man because he is an example of redemption. And he's giving leadership. The very fact that he has brought the police department in, all the graduations are held in police headquarters, and the families of these ex-offenders flood into the place. Every Christmas, they have a Christmas party in the prison in the dining hall where companies bring in chairs and they set up maybe 15 living rooms with Christmas trees. And,
oh, man.
And they bring toys not only for the inmates but for their families. Some of these men and women have not hugged their children in 3 years. And it's become so trusted that they outgrew the prison. So now they bus at Christmas all the inmates to a big church that's being held. And so there's so many creative things that are building bridges between people that are otherwise defined as enemies. But that's what grace can do. And there's where we ought to be putting our energies and our resources at finding models of redemption and models of restoration. But we can't do that if when we look at each other, we got to be demonizing ourselves because of our race.
I tell you, Bob, it's the tough thing, you know and I know, is what do they call it? Distribution. In other words, you might be right about this, but who's going to hear your story? I do my small part on this program, but when I think of the cacophony of nonsense that comes out of the airwaves, there's so few places to hear a story like this. So I want to say to my listeners, folks, please, please share this. This is going to be on our YouTube channel. Please share this with as many people as you can, because this is true. We've got to get the word out. I mean, this is true. Lives are at stake. When I hear about folks like your friend John Ponder and so many others you've mentioned, of course I think of our mutual friend Chuck Colson.
Yes.
Who, if he had not gone to prison, I mean, this is the irony. This is the irony of God, that by sending Chuck Colson to prison, Chuck spent the rest of his life lifting up prisoners. It's an amazing thing what redemption can do. How did you originally meet Chuck Colson?
I met Chuck through a mutual friend. He heard about my work with ex-offenders, and he asked me to meet with him. And we spent several hours, and he was listening to the testimony, because I've had gang members living with my family who we have witnessed to. And so he listened attentively to that. I introduced him to some of the people. So that's how I met Chuck.
It's just amazing to me. And now, Were you raised as a Christian, or did you become one later in life?
I became one as a result of starting the Woodson Center. When
was that?
How long ago now? 38 years ago. When I started the Woodson Center, I started it to pursue social justice until I was in Los Angeles, and one of my grassroots leaders, Leon Watkins, lived in a drug-infested neighborhood, and it was being terrorized by the East Side Crips. So he put signs up all over saying, I want to meet with the leaders. To make a long story short, he said, I will meet you in this back alley in Los Angeles. They're big alleys. And so he met him. So Leon is walking by himself, and this gang has two carloads, and the leader comes out with guns and his colors. And he said, what do you want? He said, I want to talk to you about your life. Leon sat on a trash can with this leader for 3 hours and had him in Bible study in 2 days. And in 1 week, had the whole gang in Bible study, and they transformed this group from predators to protectors of the community. And I witnessed this firsthand, and I said, Leon, how did you do that? He started reading from the gospel. And then I said, wait a minute. And so then I would call him and say, well, what does the gospel say about this situation? What does it say about? And so when I saw the concrete evidence, a secular consequence of his faith, I said, so I became a Christian, a man of faith, because I saw the walk of a disciple of Christ.
So this is in the early 80s.
Yes, early 80s.
So that's interesting. So that you were involved in all this stuff, but it wasn't until this time,
right,
that God hit you between the eyes.
And then we would sit in his living room for 5 hours, and he would do a Bible study with me, him and his wife. And I said, gosh, this has practical application.
And it's so funny, because what does an atheist say to a gang member? It's just amazing. We're going to be right back. Final segment talking to Bob Woodson. You can go to thewoodsoncenter.org or 1776unites.com. We'll be right back. Folks, I don't want to sing the blues. I'm sitting here talking to Bob Woodson. Bob, you're not singing the blues, man. You're telling us one story of victory after the other. It's so beautiful. What you just said about this man leading the Crips to Jesus. Holy guacamole. I don't know what to make of that. Now, you've seen more of this kind of stuff. So this was your entree to the Christian faith.
It really did. And again, I was moved by the evidence of the faith. And that I talk with to this day. This young man is 57 years old, and he's following, continues. His brothers died in prison. But there have been other stories like that. Pastor Freddy Garcia in San Antonio, Texas, El Cry in the Barrio. Same thing. Shetty showed me how he was hopelessly lost to drugs, and that Christ touched him. And then when I saw his ministry, El Cry in the Barrio, I saw it of it, but personally, it helped me because 17 years ago, my son was 39 and died in a tragic car accident. He was in the Bush administration, and the president called me from Air Force One and prayed with us. But when I called Freddie, the first person I called was Leon Watkins and Freddie, and said, "What do I do, man? I feel lost. I feel like taking my own life." And they said, "Bob, be still and trust the Holy Spirit and let him speak to you." Well, I did. And I felt such great comfort after a while. And so right after that, two of my other leaders lost sons. And so I was on a plane going to minister to them. And I was only able to do so because I had been helped by these two men. And so once you go through that, you know that this is something real. And so that's how I came to my faith. I know it's real.
See, that's the funniest thing. That's the most powerful apologetic. You can talk all you want, but when you hear these stories, you say, how do you make sense of that?
Right.
How do you make sense of a guy like that turning into a guy like that? That doesn't happen. That's not normal. I mean, because we've seen many stories like this. I mean, I've had many people on this program. I'd love to get some of these folks you're mentioning, Freddie Garcia, whatever. I mean, I think these stories are so compelling. And again, in the mainstream media, you don't hear these stories. You do not hear these stories.
No, and if someone wanted to challenge me to some intellectual discourse, I said, you know what? It sounds crazy to me, but you know what? It works.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's it. You get to a point where you're playing games even when you're discussing it because you're thinking, listen, folks, I know it works. Like, there's no doubt in my mind. So I'll discuss it with you if you want, but we're kind of playing mental games here because we've seen things in action. I had a few people on this show who've had stories that are so wild you could never make it up.
No.
Their lives are totally changed. They are changing lives. Jesus is in the business of changing lives, and he's using you, my friend. We're out of time. Bob Woodson, I'm just thrilled that you came up from D.C. to be continued. You let us know how you can help you with what you're doing. This is very exciting.
This is already helping.
Praise the Lord. The Woodson Center, woodsoncenter.org. Check it out.